Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Ultrasound Gel Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Ultrasound Gel Podcast. My name is Cray Bolger along with Jacob Avila and Mike Pratz.
Hello.
Hey.
All right. Today we are going to be discussing a small study out of South Korea.
Whoops. The study authors are actually from Israel.
Emergency department point-of-care ultrasonography improves time to pericardiocentesis for clinically significant effusions. This was published in the Clinical and Experimental Emergency Medicine Journal in 2017. So just a little background on this. Point-of-care ultrasound thrives on identifying actionable diagnosis in sick patients, pericardial effusion being one of those. However, understanding whether or not the patient has an effusion is your first question. The next question is, do they have tamponade? And while we historically have said that tamponade is a clinical diagnosis, sometimes this can be challenging as our patients don't read the textbooks and sometimes don't have the history and physical exam findings we expect. And timely diagnosis of pericardial effusion is important to make sure that they get a pericardiocentesis prior to developing full-blown cardiac arrest. That's a bad thing.
That's
I've heard that that's bad.
Yeah, it was, yeah, you know.
Hey, I have a question. Why didn't they just say tamponade? Why did they say clinically significant effusions?
They wanted to identify a population that needed an intervention.
I see. Okay.
So this study looked at point-of-care ultrasound to see if finding an effusion, and more specifically, a significant effusion, notice that they're not defining this as tamponade, mm-hmm. would change patient-centered outcomes such as time to intervention, length of stay, or mortality. So their question, in patients with cardiac tamponade or large pericardial effusion, does point-of-care ultrasound affect the time to diagnosis and outcomes?
So the way that they went about this was retrospectively looking at patients who fit this definition that they made. And like we discussed, this is kind of the point of it was to figure out, do these people need an intervention such as either pericardiocentesis or some sort of surgical intervention to alleviate that fluid off the heart? This was done at a single center. They retrospectively dug through their hospital database, searching by an ICD code to figure out who had the diagnosis of pericardial effusion or tamponade. And again, they looked to see which ones of those required a procedure. Then they looked back and saw which of those patients received a point-of-care ultrasound in the emergency department. And those became the two groups that they're comparing: those that got a point-of-care ultrasound in the department and those who did not get a point-of-care ultrasound in the emergency department. They also looked at everything else, such as their demographics, their comorbidities, electrocardiograms, chest x-rays, official echocardiograms, types of procedures, etc. And the main outcomes that they wanted to see were multiple. They had multiple primary outcomes, which is not what we like to see, but they wanted to include a door to pericardiocentesis time, the amount of pericardiocentesis fluid, and the length of hospital stay. Secondary outcomes, mortality. So the scans were done by six physicians in the emergency department. They were trained according to the curriculum of the Israeli Association of Emergency Medicine. And they did just your basic focused four-view cardiac ultrasound. The results that they got over the 4.5 years of this study, there was 500,000 emergency department visits and only 1,000 point-of-care ultrasound studies total. So that's kind of low compared mm-hmm. to what a lot of academic places in the U.S. are doing as far as point-of-care ultrasound.
I would say especially given the volume of visits, right. that the percentage of effusions is significantly lower than
exactly.
I would expect.
Yeah, so they only had 73 patients that they found had significant pericardial effusions. And of course, you can miss some as this is retrospective and only searching by an ICD code, but that was the population they had. Of those 73, only 18 were diagnosed with point-of-care ultrasound. So that is our one comparison group compared to the 55 that were diagnosed by other means. And looking at that group, comparing them before we go into the main outcomes, the point-of-care ultrasound group did have a lower systolic blood pressure that was statistically significant, and they had more syncope but their blood pressure was a systolic of 117 versus 134. So whether that's really clinically significant, mm-hmm. I'd say probably not. So, door to pericardiocentesis time. Results were not statistically significant. However, the authors really try to make a good deal out of this because it is, at face value, seems significant because point-of-care ultrasound took a mean of 11.3 hours, whereas the non-point-of-care group took 70.2 hours.
It's so, that p-value is so close, though.
Yeah, p-value 0.055. But check out the standard deviation. It's the non-point-of-care group, 70.2 hours, plus or minus 126 hours. So that ranges into the negatives, mm-hmm. and then up to, like, you know, a week later. So, again, it was a close call there, whether it was significant, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of calling close calls significant.
No, and I think to emphasize that is while there's a 60-hour difference, the death rate's not different. So those 60 hours didn't seem to matter other than maybe, like, the stay in the hospital, which also wasn't deemed clinically significant.
Okay, you really took my thunder right there. I was going to end with the mortality not
Sorry.
Different, and now the cat's out of the bag.
You can cut me out.
No, that's okay. So, Cray's right. The length of hospital stay, also not significant. Mortality, not significant. And the amount of fluid drained was not significant. I wasn't too sure why they cared about the amount of fluid that they're draining, what their idea was if one group had a lot more fluid, but in any case, wasn't significant.
It was one thing I was wondering. I mean, I like that this study was done, but I think to do this study correctly, you'd have to, like, ultrasound literally, like, everybody in as point of care when they have dyspnea and see how many of those ones have significant pericardial effusions and if that changes things. Because I'm sure what happened is that, like, 55 of them, the majority of the ones that had the significant pericardial effusions, it seems like they were not actually diagnosed in the emergency department. So that means that a significant amount were just missed by not doing it. So who knows in those patients, you know, if they would have had any differences in outcome if they had been found earlier. Additionally, I'm sure there were other patients that maybe, like, just died and nobody knew what happened to them that could have had a significant pericardial effusion that might have been picked up. But I realize that the feasibility of that kind of a study is very difficult, but that would be the right way to do the study to see if point-of-care ultrasound helps. Because on face value, it looks like ultrasound doesn't really help that much. But, I mean, it can. It's just this data doesn't necessarily support that as much as we want it to. But it's because of the study design. And it's kind of all that they could do. I mean, I understand. I don't know how they could do better than this. I mean, this is good, but it's just not what I want, you know?
Being in the process of a similar study here myself, I think another big important thing is looking at the time between ultrasounds. So just because it wasn't significant on the POCUS ultrasound doesn't mean that when the comprehensive is done that you miss something necessarily if there's 12, 18, 24 hours between them. So right. You have to have a tight window between the two. You know, when was the tamponade diagnosis made? 3 days into the hospital stay, within 12 hours of admission, those kind of things are big questions you have to ask when you're doing a study like this.
Although they may not be able to do the study that you were thinking, Jacob, where you basically ultrasound everybody, yeah. I think that what we can take from that as clinicians is that we should have a low threshold to do this ultrasound if there's a possibility yeah. that someone could have a large pericardial effusion, or definitely if there's a possibility of tamponade, because look how many patients later on had that diagnosis and nobody knew about it in the emergency department. Mm-hmm. And that can be certainly useful to know. So I take from that maybe we just have a low threshold to put that echo probe on and see what we can find, because you can find something that's actionable.
To follow up on Mike's point, I think it's also helpful that you can potentially open up doorways you never would have opened before. So if there's an effusion when you weren't expecting one, is there a new malignancy? Is there pericarditis? Is there something else you didn't quite consider? So I don't... Not that I'm biased, but I don't think ever doing ultrasound is a wrong answer, especially in the patient population with chest pain and shortness of breath. You may actually open your eyes to things you didn't think you were going to find before.
Yeah, so there are some obvious limitations to doing this type of study. I think their main problem here was that they had too small of a population that they could get significant results from. So that may have, we don't know if they had another 50 patients, if maybe then their results would have been statistically significant or shown some differences. Also, in the point-of-care ultrasound group, there's an obvious selection bias because we tend to do point-of-care ultrasounds in groups that we think are going to have something on their ultrasound or when we need to rule it out. So this tends to be a sicker population or people where maybe we were more suspicious for tamponade. And those people might, just by their nature, need to get an intervention sooner, which would bias their results. Overall, their population wasn't that sick at all. As you know from their mean systolic blood pressures, they were not very low, and there was very few deaths for something that can be potentially fatal.
I'm not sure, just based on their numbers, if anybody actually met what we would consider tamponade, which would break the argument, are these clinically significant effusions, even if they're large?
Yeah, when we have a population that's kind of grouped together, the significant effusion plus tamponade, I guess we don't know if some of them were really hypotensive and sick and the majority were not, but yeah, it's hard to tell. I agree with you there. And they also didn't really have too strict of a criterion for what constituted significant effusions. It was whether or not they got an intervention. And obviously we know not all effusions are going to need some sort of intervention. There's a lot of complex decision making that goes into whether or not this particular patient would need that. So that limits some of the conclusions that we can draw from the outcomes that they assessed.
Agree. We also know that size doesn't correlate with severity. So if we're using size as one of our main, or volume of extraction of fluid as one of our main criteria, that also doesn't jive with current practices.
Right. So let me just summarize this study. This was a retrospective study looking at 73 patients that had significant pericardial effusions. What they found was that if you got a point of care ultrasound in the emergency department, you did have a less time to pericardiocentesis, but those results were not statistically significant, nor was there any difference in the overall mortality of these populations. I think that this is a valuable study, and from it, my take-home points are that although there is not all definitive evidence in this paper, intuitively, point-of-care ultrasound can help you make this diagnosis and improve your time to intervention. So I don't think that this means we should stop doing point-of-care ultrasounds, just that we need a little more data to prove that it has a patient-centered outcome benefit. So thanks to the authors for doing this cool study, and thanks to you guys for listening. Don't forget, you can check out our website at ultrasoundgel.org, sign up for our mailing list, or contact us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. We'll talk to you later.
More pressure, more gel, more pressure, more gel, more
ultrasound gel podcast.
What's this? Oh, your cheese wax.
Cheese wax.
There's always a piece of cheese wax around.
There is.